So, this is today is January 27th, 2018. My name is Graham Womack. I'm a member of the Sabre Oral History Committee. I'm here with Lowell Palmer. Lowell, thanks for being up for doing this.
Oh, no problem. I'm happy to be here.
So cool. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit about your career, just, you know, kind of talking from the time that you were a kid playing ball up until, you know, basically the end of the time, your time in the majors, and we'll touch a little bit on what life's been like since then. So tell me, I mean, what's your earliest memory of playing baseball?
Well, probably going with my father to his games. I used to go to his softball games. He used to play in Sacramento.
Oh, well, where would he play?
Redwood Park, for one of them, with Chuck D'Arcy. And he used to play for Burgermeister and Coca-Cola. He actually played in Clearwater, Florida, in the same park my first year in spring training.
Oh, no kidding.
Against the Clearwater Bombers.
Oh, wow. I'm guessing your dad's probably a World War II vet?
Yes, he was. He actually got a contract signed for baseball, and 3 days later, got drafted.
Oh my goodness, who was he going to be signing with?
You know, I never did find out. He never did mention that. He did sign with the Army.
He served, so he probably served in Europe then?
Yes. He became a medic and an ambulance driver, and he said he saw way too much.
When he got done with the war and he came back, did he ever try to pursue professional baseball again beyond playing like semi-pro?
No, he said he was too old and he would leave that up to me. But he started playing softball, and I just about did not play baseball because of my father.
Oh, wow. Why is that?
Well, I would come home and work out before I went back to spring training, and my dad would be just about the only one that would bat against me because I was hitting everybody. And I used to throw to him, and first time I ever did it, I was just throwing normal, and he was hitting the ball pretty well. And I go, wow. So I brought a little more heat, and he's still hitting the ball well. So I says, well, this is getting a little under my skin. He's an old man. I mean, he must have been 40. And I'm trying to throw. So I start throwing really hard, and he just ripped the hell out of me.
Oh, man.
And I thought, if an old man can hit me, there's no way I could pitch in the major leagues. Then come to find out, he was the batting champion in softball for the state of California.
I'm okay.
1955, 56, and 57.
Oh, wow.
So, I didn't know, but he was a heck of a hitter.
And I'm going to think, too, probably when you're growing up, he probably caught you a lot, too, when you were pitching, right?
No.
Oh, no?
No.
Oh.
I actually used to take a golf ball and throw against a cement building. And that's how I learned to field and throw accurately with a golf ball.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
And if you didn't catch it, you remember it.
So did you grow up with, like, brothers and sisters?
I had a sister, a half-sister. And my next-door neighbor and I were probably the closest, Ronnie Knight. Oh. We hung around all of our lives together and gotten all the trouble together.
So growing up, like, did you get the impression your dad really wanted you to make it as a baseball player? Like, was that something that he emphasized?
Oh, definitely. He went to every game. I can remember him yelling at me when I threw a ball, which was quite often. And he used to yell, "You know you can do better than that." So, yeah, he always wanted me to play.
Interesting. Did you ever resent that growing up?
No, actually, no, because I think that in my mind that was going to be the only way I would get out of California or get out of where we lived or ever make any money.
Yeah, and I would, I would think, too, probably by about the time that you were finishing up high school, probably the Vietnam War was starting to be a thing, too. So that had to be probably factoring into your thinking a bit.
Yes, I actually signed up with the Phillies, and I think I was like 59th in the special draft numbers. So they got me into a reserve unit in Pocatello, Idaho.
Oh, sure.
And I used to have to go to my meetings in Pocatello, and the only opening they had was a cook. So I probably poisoned 300 people.
That's funny. 59, though, is a pretty low draft number, though. I mean, that's a pretty good chance you'd be going.
Yeah, I mean, they went all the way up to 90-something, and I would have been gone long before that, and I was lucky. I really was. I did my 6 years active duty in the reserves, and I became a drill instructor.
It doesn't seem like your personality at all.
Oh, yes. When I get command, I'm gung-ho. But they used to really appreciate my hand grenade throwing.
Was there ever, the years that you were in the reserves, was there ever the feeling that, man, if I don't make it at baseball, I'm going to wind up, over in, the jungles in Southeast Asia?
I don't think I ever thought of it that way. I remember my first spring training. Your first time there, you don't understand a lot, and there are a lot of the older guys there. Like the first cut day. I didn't know how they reacted or how they did that, and I asked one guy, and he says, well, when you come in off of the field today, if there's a pink slip hanging in your locker, that means they've released you. I said, oh, good. All I have to do is look for something pink, and I'm colorblind. I said, I'll probably notice the notice. And he goes, yeah, you probably will. So anyway, I came in that day, and I had a pink slip.
Oh.
And I sat down, and I guess I was starting to cry, and the manager came over and said, what's your problem? I said, well, I don't know. I just got released. He says, released? He says, this is fake. Someone just put it in there. I said, oh, thank God.
Oh, man.
But when I got into to the major leagues and you go to spring training, everything's a lot different. They call you and they talk to you. Like I remember Gene Mock, he hunted me down for 6 days because I used to, every time I saw him coming, I would avoid him. They got me in the shower one year, and I couldn't get away. So he says, I want to talk to you after. I said, oh, okay. So I knew I was getting cut. But we had Doc Edwards was, if he came over and said, the manager wants to talk to you, he was the virtue of death.
He was a former big leaguer, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He was a coach and a big league. Nicest guy probably in baseball.
Was his actual first name Bruce? Would that have been what his name was?
You know, I never knew him but with Doc.
Interesting. Yeah, and I'll have to look that up. So tell me, coming out of high school, you get drafted by the Orioles. What round were you drafted? Was it toward the top, or do you remember roughly where you were drafted?
I think it was like 23rd or something. And then when I didn't sign with them, I went through the special draft with Philadelphia, and I was drafted, I think, second or fourth in that draft. And went with Phillies to Leesburg, Florida.
Do you ever regret not signing with the Orioles? Do you think your career might have turned out differently if you'd signed with the O's?
You know, you really don't know because there's circumstances where they may have had too many players or not enough pitchers or or whatever. So you really can't guess about it. It's just there.
Yeah. So what about so you get drafted, you know, and you sign with the Phillies. What was your rise like through the minor leagues then? Was it quick? Did it take a little while?
Well, I was told in my first spring time I was supposed to pitch that the general manager of the Phillies was going to be there, the owner of the Phillies was going to be there. All these people have heard how hard I throw the ball. They were all going to be there to see me for the very first time. Well, the first batter up, I drilled him in the head, and they took him to the hospital with double vision.
Oh, man.
And the next three batters, I was 10 feet outside. I was afraid to hit him. So that didn't turn out real well for my first introduction to all the big weeks. But I do remember they were timing us from home plate. We would swing a bat and then run to home plate,
oh, yeah,
or run to first base, and they would time us down there. And there was this guy, older gentleman, and he was wearing, we were in Florida, and he was wearing one of those Florida flower shirts, and he had pants, they were all ripped at the bottom, and he was wearing thongs and stuff. And he was standing at the bag, and when you ran by the bag, he would had a stopwatch. Well, when you ran down there, he was right there. I mean, he actually just about hit you when he put his hand down with the stopwatch. And I went over to the coach, and I says, "Coach, I don't know who he is, but I don't know why he's... I mean, can't you back him off a little? I mean, you're trying to get down there." He goes, "He's your owner." I said, "Nice guy, nice guy."
That's funny. So, how did you learn enough control in the minors to get to the majors? Like, was there anybody you worked with in particular who was good about like kind of helping you with stuff, or did you get better through practice? Like, how did it work?
They showed me a lot. The one thing they told me was, you can't throw a good curveball, you can't throw a changeup, but we can teach you to throw those. We can't teach you to throw hard, and that's the one thing you do well. And there were days when I could close my eyes and throw strikes.
Oh, man.
And there were days when I could stand 2 feet from home plate and not hit the plate.
What do you think that was about?
Well, I always had to throw the ball hard. I couldn't, if I threw it easy, it would just go anywhere. I didn't have the control. I hated throwing batting practice. So during batting practice, the guys would stand up there and they'd wait their turns for batting practice, and I'd be throwing 100 miles an hour. And I wasn't that bad, but I mean, if I threw one close, it'd scare them, you know, and this is just batting practice. Well, I got to the point where I learned my lesson. If they were outside the batting cage waiting to hit, I'd let one go and it just about hit them outside the batting cage. I never had to pitch after that.
Did you ever hit a guy during batting practice?
Oh, yes. I hit them when they weren't even in the batting cage. So I didn't have to pitch too often. Not many people wanted to get in there.
What about as far as your velocity? Do you ever have any idea of the fastest you threw? You think you ever touched 100?
Oh, yeah, yeah. At Philadelphia, I had thrown 8 innings. And the next night they brought in it was a machine where you had to throw a strike.
Oh, sure, yeah.
It was wood. And you had to throw down the middle, and it gave you the...
Yeah, Bob Feller used to have to throw through those in the 40s, I think.
Yeah, and they didn't have guns then. So anyway, I had thrown 8 innings, and my arm was pretty pretty sore, but they said it's the only day this was going to be here. So they said, throw it, don't hurt your arm, but throw what you can throw. I said, okay. Took six pitches before I hit the strike zone to get timed, and the seventh pitch, it was 104 miles an hour.
Oh. Wow.
And that's the day after I had pitched eight innings.
Oh, man. So throwing like that, I mean, I have to think, like, throwing like that, did you get to the point pretty early on in your career where you're having, like, sore arms or having to get cortisone shots or stuff?
No. Basically, everybody says after you throw so your arm doesn't swell, you stick it in ice for a half hour or so. Submerge your arm in ice and shoulder and all this stuff. Well, if I did that, I couldn't pitch the next day because my arm was so stiff. So I did just the opposite, and I'd go in the shower and I'd turn it on as hot as I could stand it, and I would scald my arm, get it as hot as I possibly could, and the next day I could throw again.
Oh, wow.
But the problem was I'd forget to turn the water down and someone would go in there.
Oh, man.
And they were yelling at me, burning themselves. But I did just the opposite. I did the opposite of everything. And for me, it helped me.
Did you ever have Johnny Sain as a pitching coach?
Yes, I did.
Because I heard he was big on throwing every day and kind of bucking the conventional wisdom.
Well, Johnny Sain and I, the first time I ever faced him, we butted heads. Mm. I was with the White Sox, and he'd never seen me pitch before, so I went out and I pitched in spring training, and I struck out the three batters. And I walked into the dugout, and I sat down, and my chest was sticking out 15 feet. And Johnny comes up and goes, "Why did you do that?"
Oh, man.
And I said, "Excuse me?" He goes, "Why did you strike out those batters?" He says, "You got eight players out there that are backing you up." He says, "All you got to do is throw it down there so they can hit it." Oh, and I said, "Oh, okay." Johnny was a finesse pitcher, and he got people to ground out and pop up.
Sure.
Me, I had to strike them out. I mean, you can always have an error, you can always goof up, but if you strike somebody out, they're out.
Yeah.
Except when the catcher misses the ball, and then they go to first base because the catcher can't get to the ball.
So tell me, so you debut with the Phillies, what, like 66, 67 about?
I was in the minor leagues, 66, 67, 68, and I played A ball my first year. Went to A ball my second year, and then I thought, oh, good, I'm going to go to double A this year, and I guess it was in Reading then. And I'll be darned if I wound up in San Diego in triple A.
Oh, man.
So I've never played double A ball, and I only played A ball 2 years.
Oh, wow. Interesting. You hear that kind of thing happening, though, and guys having kind of unusual paths through the minors, or guys going from A-ball to the majors. I mean, that happens once in a while.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I threw so hard that I actually amazed myself. I threw a no-hitter in Kingston, North Carolina, and I hadn't picked up a ball in 41 days.
Oh, man.
And I was throwing so well that in the seventh inning, I closed my eyes and threw a strike.
Oh, man.
But if they'd have hit it and it had come back at me, it'd have killed me because I wouldn't have saw it.
Oh, man.
But I was throwing the ball. It didn't matter how it went right. And I threw my first no-hitter.
Interesting. So you get to the majors then about 1969.
Yes.
So it's an interesting year. You got basically Dick Allen's in his last year with the Phillies. You know, winds up getting traded for Curt Flood, obviously in December. You know, it's that famous trade where Flood refuses to report.
Yeah.
And you know, and whatnot. But tell me what it was like coming to that Phillies team that year. I know that they were a few years removed from that '64 season where they almost won the pennant. by 69, was the team kind of starting to fracture? I mean, were they still pretty good? I mean, what did you come into exactly?
When I got there, you always have the standard guys that want you to look up to them. They want to try to, I don't know how to say it, but it just kind of curve you where you fit into the group. Then you have the other guy that says, this guy can do it, let him do it. But I don't think I really ever ran into people that were disgusting, let's put it that way. Most of them were always nice. But when you're fighting, when you have 10 pitchers that get a job and you got 16 pitchers there, you're praying the guy goes out and screws up. Even though you don't want him to, even though you want your team to win, you don't get a job if he does well.
And it's funny because baseball's changed so much in that regard. Now you'll see teams carrying 16, 17 pitchers pretty routinely, or at least using that many through the course of the season.
Well, they always used a lot, but you can only have 10 at a time.
Yeah.
And when you leave spring training, you want to be with that club. It's just like, I was with 10 organizations total, but I was in 5 major league out of the 10. Your baseball card, when you leave spring training, if you're not on the roster, you don't get a baseball card that year. So all those other 5 teams that I played for, I was traded and got there, so I never got a card.
You would have been in the up, if it was 10, 20 years later, they started doing those update sets, but that was probably before
exactly,
that.
Exactly. You know, baseball is so much different. Guys make $600,000 their first day. You make $9,500 for the year. But you know what? It was the love of baseball. It's not the love of baseball right now.
So back when you played, I mean, I know it was the era where guys had to have off-season jobs. Like Dusty Baker was talking about early in his career, I think he sold cars and he sold insurance. You know, Tommy Johns told me about reffing high school basketball. I think Jim Kopp might have sold shoes. What were your off-season jobs early in your career?
My only one was I worked for Payless Store. I started at 11 at night and worked till 7 in the morning for $2.10 an hour. And I thought, well, I'll work at night so I can go out and play all day long. I got news. When you got home, you went to bed.
Yeah.
You slept all day long. But it got to the point where we were in there stocking the store and everything, and people would steal too much stuff and sneak it out while there was nobody there. So they locked the doors on us. We couldn't leave the building until that morning when our manager got there.
That seems illegal.
No, I mean, the head guy could have a key.
Oh, okay.
But no one could go out unless there was something happening.
Were you like a night stalker or something?
Yeah, we stocked all the shelves.
Oh, man.
Cut the boxes open, had to clean up the store afterwards and everything. But I can remember looking out the window and guys breaking into your car, and you can't go outside.
Oh.
No.
No, and I can explain.
And people were stealing stuff out of our cars, and we couldn't get outside to stop them. We called the police, but they're already gone by the time the police got there.
Oh, man.
But, I mean, that were those days. Today, I mean, right now, at my age, I'd do anything for $2.10 an hour, too.
So tell me, how many off seasons did you work for Payless?
I worked for 3 years for Payless in the off season. Before I went into baseball, I used to work at a theater. I started out as a usher And then I worked my way up to a candy man, worked at the candy counter. And then I worked my way up to the doorman, and then the assistant manager, and then baseball came.
So, debuting with the Phillies in 69, I mean, what was it like breaking in as a rookie with that team? Were they welcoming to rookies?
Well, yeah. Most of the guys are happy to have someone fresh there that maybe can help them. If the whole team is a success, you're going to get paid for that. If one guy is a goofball and he goofs up and you don't win a lot of games or you lose a lot of games, it can hurt you too, even though you don't want them to do good. You want them to do good because they say, we don't care how you do it, just do it. But of course, if you don't do it, you're gone.
Interesting. So who were the teammates that you gravitated towards early on?
Well, the young guys. Don Money. Terry Harmon. Jerry Johnson. Tony Taylor. One of the older guys.
Oh, yeah. He's a long-time Philly.
Oh, yeah. Tony was one of the nicest guys you ever want to meet. Lou Brock. Loved the guy.
Even playing against him?
Oh, yeah. But I played with him, too, when I was with the Cardinals.
Oh, okay. Oh, interesting. When did you get traded to the Cards?
72.
Oh, okay.
And Lou was a great guy.
Great clubhouse president.
Nicest guy you ever want to meet. A jokester, but of course, if you don't joke around, you're serious, and if you're serious, you're a dud.
He helped define that decade of baseball, you know, with all the artificial turf and the game getting so much faster and guys stealing all those bases.
He was just one of those people that if he couldn't be the best, he wouldn't even do it. And he could do the best. He could run like a rabbit.
So tell me, you break in with the Phillies, and then, I don't know, what was your first great success in the majors? Like, what do you remember maybe about, say, like the first game you won?
Probably my first success in the majors was hitting a home run.
Yeah, you were telling me earlier you hit that one on a liner.
Yeah, I thought shortstop was gonna catch it, but it went over his head and it kept going, so I took off running, and when I hit first base I lost my helmet and I'm going to second, and I look over at my coach and he's got his hands up. So I slid into second and I thought, oh man, I gotta double my first time. And the shortstop came over and said, hey kid, you hit a home run. And I stood up and I'm looking around. I didn't get off the bag because I was afraid he was lying to me and he was going to tag me out with the ball.
That's funny.
But my coach says, come on. And I actually hit a home run. I was really shocked.
You played with Dick Allen. What was he like both as a person and as a teammate? Like, what do you remember about him?
Dick was aloof, but he was a lot of fun. He always wanted to be with the players. Never had problems with them. Management was his problem. He didn't like to be told what to do or how to do this or how to do that.
Well, he was a player who stood up for what he was worth, too, because I read an old interview with him from, like, Sport Magazine from, like, maybe 1966. And he's talking about, like, the way he's compensated. And he's like, look, it doesn't make any sense to just give me money after I've done everything. Like, you know, like, I should be getting paid adequately now.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a good family man. His wife was a very nice person. Everybody got along fine. We didn't have too many problems on the team at all, actually, that first year. it was kind of a, I remember we had Ron Stone trying out for the team, and he must have hit 400 in spring training and got to the big leagues, and he probably didn't hit 150. But everybody seemed to, you know, enjoy it. The thing I can remember most of all is that they were baseball players. They wanted to play. They wanted to get out. It wasn't the money that really mattered. It was playing. Because we weren't getting paid a lot, most of us. I can remember, we used to play cards. While we were on the road trips. And they put our checks down in front of us while we were playing cards one day. And I opened up my check and I looked and I said, oh, I got a raise. I said, $16,000. I said, I only make 900 and something. And I looked at the thing and it was Tim McCarver's check.
Oh.
And I said, Tim, you make $16,000 every check? He says, I only make 900. He goes, yeah, I can buy a new car every month. And I said, okay.
Was he a good catcher? Like, I've heard kind of different things about him, but I mean, was he somebody who like handled pitchers well?
Actually, yes. He was better with the younger players. Him and Doc Edwards were the best two catchers because they would tell you what they wanted by signs. A lot of the catchers, they give you a sign and you better throw it. They would push it down or push it up or inside, outside. They would let you know where you didn't, if you didn't know, you were going to learn.
Absolutely. So you came up in an era of baseball where there was a lot of greeny kind of amphetamine usage. Like, did you see that at all in the clubhouses? Was that something that guys were doing back then?
We didn't see many drugs in those early years. The only thing I tried, it's called Red Chew. And if you chewed this stuff, you were so dizzy, you couldn't even stand up. And these guys from Dominican and over there, they brought it with them. And, I mean, they acted normal with it. But, man, I chewed it one time. I couldn't even find the door to get out. So everybody has something different going.
So you have one of the most famous cards in baseball history where you're wearing the black shades in it. You were telling me the story a little bit, but just for anybody listening, like tell me a little bit about kind of how that card sort of came to be.
They wanted to take the picture for the card, and he wanted me to face the sun. And I had a covering when I was born over my eyes that was missing, so sunlight just affected my eyes terribly. If I looked in the sun, I couldn't see. I mean, I'd be tearing, my eyes would be closed. So he told me to face it. I says, I can't do that. I can't get my eyes open. I says, how about if I do go the other way? And he says, no. He says, then I can't get the picture. I said, well, I put my glasses on. I said, this is the only way you're going to get me staring into the sun. So he took it. And ever since then, I wore glasses. Oh. Sunglasses.
What kind of theories have you heard from fans over the years about why you were wearing glasses in the photo? What kind of things have people said?
In New York one time, I was walking to the bullpen and somebody said, hey, Palmer, why do you wear those glasses? And I said, if you would see what I'm seeing now, you'd wear them too. We laughed and laughed, and New York fans are really tough. Well, I used to joke with them all the time, and because I would joke with them, we became friends. But if you got a little nasty with them, you were no longer friends. So I had some really good friends in Philadelphia and New York, which was a lot of times impossible.
Absolutely. So You're kind of a character during your career, and you had some fun. I was at a dinner recently, and I heard Dusty Baker speak, and he was talking about how when they were doing bed checks on the road, how kind of, you know, the sort of veteran good players would get a little leeway on stuff like that. If you were hitting the ball well, you'd be checked off as being in your room and stuff. I mean, what kind of memories do you have sort of along those lines?
I can remember the worst of the worst in the fact that at one time with the Phillies, I was the only single player. And in the paper, it came out, a player was caught out with this woman after curfew, no name was given. But everybody assumes it's me because I'm the only single player. No, it wasn't me. I got a lot of the blame for a lot of stuff that I didn't do and didn't get caught for the things I did do.
Well, what's one story maybe that's never been told before, if you're comfortable to tell it? Just any kind of wild story that would have happened just in the course of your career?
Well, I won't give any names on this one.
Sure.
We were in Pittsburgh, and I walked into the hotel in Pittsburgh, and there was a beautiful lady checking us in, and I just said, "Are you married?" And she goes, "No." And I said, "You are beautiful." And she goes, "Are you married?" And I said, "No." And she says, "Well, that's good, because I don't like people that ask me when they're married." I said, "Well, I'm not." I said, "Would you like to go out? I'll leave you some tickets." She goes, "No." She says, "I'm sorry, but I already have a date tonight." I said, "Okay." I said, "If anything ever happens, give me a call. You know where I'm at." So about 4 hours later, I get a phone call, and she said, "Things have changed. How would you like to go out? Are you still willing?" I said, "Oh, definitely." So after the game, we went to the Underground City in Atlanta.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Oh, it was great. I've never been there, and she was showing me around. I mean, this was one of the type of women that I would say I would marry if circumstances came out good. So we're walking down there, and all of a sudden, she grabs me and pulls me over the side, and she goes, "Oh my God." I said, "What's wrong?" She goes, "The guy I was supposed to go out with tonight is right over there."
Oh no.
"And I called him and told him I wasn't feeling good. That's why I went out with you." I said, "Oh, well, I mean, we just have to tell him." She says, "I don't think you're going to want to." I said, "Why?" "It's your manager." I said, "Excuse me?" She says, "Yeah, I called him and told him I wasn't feeling good." I says, "I'm not feeling good." Anyway, he saw us standing there, and I didn't do much pitching for a while. No names.
That's funny. So first time you got traded in your career, what were the circumstances on that exactly? God.
First time I got traded, it was an inter-family trade.
Wow.
I was with the Phillies, and they traded me to the White Sox, which the White Sox general manager was married to the Phillies general manager's daughter.
Because they did a couple deals in those years. Didn't Jim Cott go from the Phillies to the White
Sox? Exactly, because they were related, family-wise.
I'm trying to think, because I feel like there's even a couple other guys who got traded from the Phillies to the Sox.
So, anyway, it was an inter-family trade, and I was gone. I was over the White Sox.
Yeah, Dick Allen wound up on the White Sox, too, but he had another stop in between, I think. But, yeah.
But they all get their... I went down... Larry Sherry was their AAA manager, and I went, I think it was in Tucson, maybe it was Tucson. I went down there when I got traded to them. They sent me to the minor leagues. And Larry says, well, I've never seen you pitch, Lowell, so come down here and throw a couple, will you? And I said, sure. So went down and into the bullpen, and I started throwing. I threw for about 10 minutes. He goes, okay. He said, do you have a curve or, you know? And I said, not really. I have a slider. And he says, well, okay. He says, I'll take a look at you tomorrow, rest. And I says, well, I haven't really warmed up yet. And he goes, well, you, he says, you were throwing about 80, 85, right? I says, yeah, but that was just warming up. He goes, oh. He says, go ahead, throw. He says, throw some, you know, what you'd normally throw. So I reared back and I let a couple go, and one went off the catcher's glove right by his face. And Larry said, your arm's all right, right? I says, yeah. And he goes, someone screwed up because you shouldn't be here. So I says, well, you know, we're all going to pay our dues somewhere.
With how hard you could throw in the bigs, I mean, what do you think kept you from having more success?
I would say it makes no difference if you can throw it 1,000 miles an hour. If you don't put it in the right spot, they can hit it.
Leo Mazzoni, I've interviewed him a couple times, and he talks about, yeah, kind of the idea of sort of keeping hitters off balance and, yeah, basically, yeah, just control and, yeah, and being able to hit
your spots. If they're ready for it, they'll hit it. And believe me, they're ready for it. They look for that fastball. And if you don't put it in a good spot, and at that time I really didn't have a lot of control because I was trying to overthrow. But when I was throwing well, I don't think anyone could have touched me. If I could have put it where I wanted to, I think I would have had a much better, longer career. And if I wasn't such a smart butt.
What about, like, you know, you play 60s, 70s. A little while later, bullpen usage completely revolutionizes in baseball, and you get closers coming in, and now you have all these different specialists. Do you ever wonder if you'd come up a little later, and do you think maybe you could have been, like, an elite reliever?
Well, in the minor leagues, I only relieved once, I think. And in the Philly organization, I completed more games than anybody in the organization in a couple of the years. If I started a game, I wanted to complete the game. I didn't want to be taken out. I just wanted to get a complete win. And now, it just wouldn't work. I was wild enough, so when I would go into a game, say in relief in the major leagues, there might be bases loaded already, and if I walk one or two guys, I'm out again.
Oh, yeah.
If I came in and they started making me a reliever because I could throw hard, but I didn't have the accuracy to be a reliever, but I could get myself out of trouble. In fact, before I even got into the pros, in high school, my coach came up and told me, he says, we got 5 scouts going to look at you today. So I want you to throw, you know, watch how you'd throw and throw, you know, good, decent, don't. I walked 16 batters, struck out 20, and won the game.
Oh, my goodness.
And my coach says, they're going home scratching their heads tonight.
That's like that part in Bull Durham where they're after the Nuke LaLucia's first game. They're like, yeah, he struck out 18 batters. League record. He also walked 18 batters.
Exactly.
Also a league record. And then, yeah.
And that's the way I was. In fact, in Hawaii one time, Doc Edwards was catching for me. Doc told me before the game, he says, you know, one more wild pitch and you will have the record for wild pitches in this league.
Oh, my goodness.
I said, really? He says, but you're not going to get it. He says, because I'm not going to let you do it. And I said, we'll see. So I threw one in the dirt, and Doc stopped it. And I said, wow. I said, okay, Doc. So I threw one about 15 feet over his head. It went up, the screen went up to the speaker in the back, and you know how they roll back down?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the guy on first went all the way to third because it went all the way up, went all the way up the screen.
And
Doc says, that's the only way you were going to get that guy there.
Did you ever hear the story of, I think it's Ron Swoboda? You know, he's playing for the Mets and he's at Shea Stadium. He starts just striking out, and it's like he's having a game. He's striking out 3-4 times, and somehow it flashes on the scoreboard that he's got a chance for 5 strikeouts. Mets fans gave him a standing ovation as he strikes out the 5th time.
Let me tell you another one about Swoboda. He was over at Connie Mack Stadium with us, and he was in right field. And we were just killing the guy because we were yelling at him, you're the lowest paid player on the team.
Oh.
How can you be out there? Why are they letting you play? And Johnny Briggs was up to bat, which he could hit the heck out of the ball, left-hander. He was very underrated, but he could. Anyway, we were yelling at him, and he was yelling back at us. And Johnny hits a shot. And Swoboda didn't even see it.
Oh, man. Oh, no.
And we're yelling at him. And all of a sudden, he turns around, and he sees the ball coming. And it hits him right in the chest.
Oh.
And he traps it. Like this. He caught it.
Oh, man.
But he trapped it.
Oh, man.
We were, oh, yeah. The next night he came out and he undid his shirt. He had the biggest black and blue mark.
Oh, I can imagine.
And we said, you earned your money last night.
Oh,
but, oh, we had some good times out there.
So past Chicago, like, what were some of the later stops of your career? Like, what were some of the other places? You were telling me that you got traded for Mike Kekich.
I got traded for the wife swappers. And I made a statement that I didn't get a good deal out of it because I didn't even get a wife. And that didn't go over very good. I don't know. My first time I pitched in San Diego was a different one. It was right after the owner had yelled at the team for losing so many games.
And he came on the PA, too, and he apologized to the fans.
Oh,
right?
yeah. But I was told that I got wild when I started coming down here instead of up here. So I would throw overhand and then I would sneak in a submarine every once in a while, and Dusty Baker was up, and I had struck on Dusty out quite a few times with that pitch consecutively. So I threw that pitch and I struck Dusty Baker out. Well, the owner called down to the dugout and told the manager to take me out because I'm lowering my arm again.
Oh, jeez.
And this was in the 6th inning, and we were winning. They took me out. Well, 7th inning, we lost the game.
Oh, man.
So I didn't get a decision on my first time out in San Diego.
San Diego seems like it would have been probably a tough place to be a pitcher. On one hand, you got a good pitcher's park, but those teams really couldn't hit for anything.
When when the expansion came out and they protected the players, they only got to protect 10 players on the 40-man roster. I was one of those protected by Philadelphia.
Yeah, for the 69 expansion.
Right.
Yeah.
And I sat in the office and the San Diego general manager offered Philadelphia a whole bunch of money for me, and they wouldn't sell me because they wanted me to be on the San Diego team because I was playing in the minor leagues there in San Diego at the time.
Oh, sure.
And they wouldn't let me go.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because you had kind of some stud pitchers who got drafted in that draft are guys who'd been highly touted in the past. Like, I know Bouton goes to the Seattle Pilots.
Right.
Wasn't it Wally Bunker went to the Royals, I
yes.
think?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was just, I was surprised they kept me. They kept Don Money, and they kept me, and they kept Boa. They kept all the young, some of the young guys, and we were all from the same areas. But...
Well, Phillies were a few years at that point from really starting to get good again, because you figure, yeah, mid-70s is when they started really yeah. pumping.
Yeah, Robin Roberts. Okay. I remember listening to him on the radio pitching. He could throw the ball pretty darn good.
He played on a lot of bad Phillies teams, too.
Yes, he did. And that's the year that they had 10 games left, and all they had to do was win one to get in the playoffs. And they lost all 10.
Yeah, it was 1964. Yeah, yes. Year of Johnny Callison.
I came in 1969, and they still hadn't gotten over that.
Yeah. Yeah, because when you said John Briggs, wasn't John Briggs kind of peripherally involved in that famous Dick Allen-Frank Thomas fight that happened? I thought Briggs was somehow involved in
I'm
that.
I'm not sure. The only thing I can remember about Johnny Briggs is that he was probably one of the better hitters. And I was told that he sat on the bench for 6 years and never played before they even gave him a shot at
oh,
it.
Oh, man.
And then when they gave him a shot at it and he was good, they didn't have enough room for him, so they got rid of him.
Oh, man.
I remember Grant Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
Grant Jackson and Briggs, I became pretty good friends with them. So they took me out to a nightclub. And it was downtown, so I can't even remember where it was at, but it was a barn.
Huh.
And you had to go through a phone booth. The door was a phone booth. So I go into this phone booth, and all of a sudden, I'm the only white person in the building. And Johnny says, "He's with us." I was the happiest guy in the world because everybody loved me. Because I was with them.
Do you think, I know, like, so you're from Sacramento and I'm from Sacramento. I know, like, me growing up here, like, my high school was one of the most ethnically diverse high schools. I think it possibly was the most ethnically diverse one on the West Coast. Do you think, like, growing up in Sac kind of helped prepare you for, you know, being friends with kind of, you know, players of all different colors and stripes?
Well, I went to Grant for a year. Which there were very few white people going there at that time. And then I went to Norty. But I get along with anybody as long as they get along with me. I remember I was so scared when I was playing in I think it was Babe Ruth. And this kid, this big, tall, black kid, could throw the ball. And his name was Otis Deloney. And when he released the ball, when you swung, you just about hit his fingertips. He was about, I would say, 6'1 or 2 at that time. And he was huge compared to us. But they didn't have his birth certificate.
Oh.
But he scared me to death. And I'm a pitcher. I've hit so many people, I don't complain when I get hit. I mean, I got hit 4 times in one game by one person who I will not name from Sacramento, and he told me he was going to hit me, and he hit me in the back, he hit me in the shoulder, he hit me in the knee, and the last time he hit me right between the shoulder blades, and I did not go out after him, and that last time he hit me, the umpire said, "Get him." So when I pitched, I got him. But I'm not going to tell you his name.
I have a feeling I could guess it, but yeah, I am.
He went to Burbank.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, no, that was kind of the era of baseball, though, that I remember Don Drysdale. There's the famous quote of his, too, where it was like, "Man, if you get one of my guys, I'm going to get two of yours, and they're not going to be some dumpy hitters
exactly.
either."
Exactly. I'm going to wait and I personally, I could never see hitting the next guy. He didn't do anything. Why hit the next guy? Wait until the guy comes around again. But normally you're not in there that long. But, yeah, I remember playing in Arizona. I had this guy yelling at me the whole time. And I was pretty wild that day. And he came up in one of the innings as a pinch hitter. And I told the catcher, I said, I'm going to drill him. So the second pitch, I hit him in the hip. He went down to first, and I remember him turning to me and saying, you ain't that so good. Second pitch, I tried to pick him off a second or off a first, and I'll be darned if I hit him right in the middle of the back. The next pitch, guy hit the ball, he took off running for second. They tried to throw him out, they hit him in the head and knocked him out cold.
Oh man.
He got hit 3 times in about 5 pitches.
Oh geez. Oh man.
So it all comes back to you, believe me.
So I know you said you were with 10 organizations. I mean, at what point did you finally reach the point where you're like, man, I can't do this anymore. I got to do something else. Like, what was that stage for you?
Well, I quit. I quit and came back and went back and played football in college.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Where'd you play football?
Sacramento City College.
Oh, you played at City College?
Yeah.
Oh, no kidding.
I went back and played, and I played 2 years, and I got a scholarship to go to Oregon.
Wait, you still had amateur eligibility for that?
Yes, I did.
How old were you at that point?
30.
No kidding. How did that... I thought if you signed a contract in any capacity, it wrecked all your amateur eligibility.
That's the way it used to be. But now it only wrecks your eligibility in the sport you signed in.
Oh, okay. Because rules were starting to change then.
Yeah, they did. And what had happened is I went to American River College.
Oh.
And tried out for their team. And I'd already signed to go play baseball.
Oh, sure.
But when the coach found out that I was a pro ball player, he says, you can't play on our team. I said, no, I signed baseball. He says, it doesn't matter. You're a pro. And while I was in baseball, they changed that rule.
Oh.
And I came back. And they gave me a scholarship. I was 7 days short of a pension. And baseball calls me up and says, would you like to come back? We'll bring you up. You only need 7 days. We'll bring you up at the end of the year. If you don't come up before that, we'll put you in AAA and we'll bring you up. So I went and played in Syracuse, New York. So I said, okay, at the end of the year, 30 days, I'll get my pension, you know, I'll be happy as a lark. Well, they traded me before that happened, and the people didn't bring me up at the end of the year, so I never got my pension.
You wound up 7 days short of a pension? Oh, that sucks. Because, yeah, you had to have 4 years of service time back then. Or, oh, five. It was five even then. Did you get any
before
sort of...
Before that, it was 7.
Yeah, no, because, I mean, yeah, you hear these horror stories of guys like Carl Hubble who were just,
well,
like, facing poverty.
There was 7 guys that needed one day.
That's so sad.
But we went to court. It took 22 years.
Yeah.
I finally started getting a pension. Well, a substitution of a pension. We only get so much per year, not monthly, per year.
And it's only like a few grand, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I assume you've talked to Doug Gladstone before, the author?
Yes.
Yeah.
But I went to court. I was 22 years. I could have collected for 22 years, so they owed me a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, this is going to be retroactive. I could, you know, I could be a millionaire. And they didn't give anything retroactive. They gave us about a little less than a quarter of what we should have got.
That's so sad.
Yearly.
Because it's like most jobs, you wouldn't expect that if you're only at a job for a few years, you get a lifetime pension. But baseball's different. It's like you spend so many years preparing for it. You only really have a set amount of time you can do it. There aren't very many people out there who could do the job that you're doing. And
people don't realize that they think you go out and you play 3 hours on the field. We're there 3 hours before.
Oh, absolutely.
We're there after. During the summer or during the winter, when you think we're not playing, we're working out. We've got things we have to do. We have surgeries that we have to... I mean, you have a lot of surgery. I've had 27 surgeries.
Yeah, I'm seeing some of the scars on your legs. Oh, man.
I had open heart surgery, 6 bypasses.
Oh, geez.
I had lung surgery. I had 8 right knee, 7 left knee. Now I have knee replacements in both of them.
Man.
I have hip replacements on both of them. I have shoulder replacements on both of them.
How much of that do you think was baseball and how much of that was just life?
You're always running. You're always doing things. And don't forget, I played semi-pro football in the offseason.
Oh, wow.
And they caught me. My scout happened to show up at a game I was playing. I used to play for the Buffaloes here in Sacramento.
Oh, that's cool.
But my scout was in the stands. But I used a different name. But I went to the bench and sat down, took off my helmet, and he saw me.
Oh.
I got fined for that one.
What was your position in football?
I was, for the college, I was the tight end, fullback, linebacker, quarterback, punter, extra point man, and all around killer. I used to love football. And when I graduated out of high school, I think I weighed 175 pounds.
Oh, wow.
And my parents wouldn't let me play in high school until the last year because I was so small.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
So you just missed playing against my father-in-law. He went to Woodland High. He's class of 64.
Oh.
His name is Greg Johnson. He wound up going and playing at UC
Greg
Davis.
Greg Johnson?
Yeah, or Gregory. He was a linebacker. He was pretty good, too. He played through college until he had a few concussions. I think it was like his fourth concussion he had to stop.
Oh, I used to love football. And then when I played for Sac City, then I played for the Statesmen and the Buffaloes here in Sacramento.
And you never did wind up going to play at U of O?
No. Oh. No. After I went to college, I forfeited it when I didn't go, when I went tried to get my pension.
Oh, that sucks.
Hey, I just wanted to get my pension. Well, at least I got something. And they helped me out when I had my heart attack. I had 2 major heart attacks and 6 bypasses. And the first surgery was only supposed to last for 5 years, and it's been 24 years.
Wow. So, I mean, what's life been like since baseball? Like, what have you done?
Well, believe it or not, I was a teacher, physical education teacher.
Oh, that makes sense.
For Phoenix Schools.
Oh, okay.
I used to go to their school. They had 6 schools here in Sacramento area, up in Folsom and up in Placerville and Woodland and all over Citrus Heights. I used to, each day I'd go to, and I had, get this, kindergarten, first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth graders.
Oh, whoa.
And not one of them in all those years outran me.
Oh, no kidding.
But they came close.
That's funny.
But I was a teacher 9 years, and then schools expanded too much.
Sure.
There was 290 people working for them.
Oh.
8 of them were men. The rest were women.
Okay.
They got rid of all the men and all the women, and then the schools went under. Somebody... A school from Phoenix Bottom.
Oh, that's ironic.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, then I had my own business. I had a sporting goods store up in Placerville for 12 years. LRP Sports Kingdom.
Ah.
And I was a truck driver for Coca-Cola.
Oh, no kidding.
And I was a truck driver for Shasta. I was a golf instructor for a year. I taught golf out at Hagen Oaks and Rancho Marietta. Let's see, what else did I do?
How about like as far as like family stuff goes? Did you ever settle down and find anybody?
Yeah, I settled down and I got slow, so I stopped dating because I couldn't outrun them anymore. I was engaged once, and it was really bad because I got engaged, gave her the ring, got the preacher, had the church all set up and everything, and her husband said no. I didn't know she was married. No. I just never got married.
Sure, it's, you know, I'm really surprised I got married. I mean, it's not in the cards for some people. I didn't think it'd be in the cards for me.
Right. I think the only thing I'm going to miss, or do miss right now, is having kids. Right now, all this money that I have now, I have no one to leave it to. You know, I've got $15 in the bank. Someone could use that for a lot.
Have you had nieces or nephews, or have you been close with any of your friends' kids or anybody?
No, my sister had two kids. One passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And the other one was mean to me, so I haven't seen her in years. I was going to adopt, and I went over to the Sacramento adoption thing. I used to go over there all the time and talk to the lady there at the front desk. And after about 15 or 20 times coming in, she just said, "Mr. Palmer, we're never going to be able to give you what you know, a child. I mean, there's no way in this world that they're going to let you adopt an 18-year-old girl."
Oh, man.
Oh, man. So I gave up on adoptions. I was younger then. But no, I was engaged once. That was about as far as. Actually, I took her to Philadelphia. She won the hot pants contest, and she also sang the national anthem. She was a professional singer here in Sacramento.
Oh, so interesting.
Yeah.
So, what do you hope to do with the years you have left in front of you? Do you have any goals or anything you're working on?
Well, I think if I fix my car, I'll be able to drive it maybe once or twice more before I'm gone. Oh. I'm just trying to survive California, I think. There's so many restrictions and rules and everything. You go along and do the best you can. You help people out if you can, and hope that you don't go too soon.
Yeah, absolutely. You got a pretty decent bell of health these days?
After 17 surgeries, I'm 22 years old inside, and I'm 70 outside.
Cool. Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground here. I really appreciate you taking all this time. And just for anybody listening, we've done this entire interview inside of an Office Depot off Madison Avenue in Sacramento. We started off in an In-N-Out, and it was way too loud, so this is where we did the interview. But, Lowell, I wanted to ask, is there anything we didn't touch on or anything you wanted to say?
No, I'm just, to be truthful, I'm just happy that I did get into baseball at that time, too.
Yeah.
It was well worth all the effort and all the stuff I did, meeting some of the nicest people and some of the worst people that weren't in baseball, but you still met people. But it was interesting. I would have never got out of California if it wasn't for baseball. Let's put it that way.
I should ask you, were with 10 different organizations. Who's your favorite teammate in all that time, or favorite person you played with?
You know, there's so many. Don Money was really a great person. Ken Reynolds. Remembered Al Raffo.
The name is vaguely familiar. I'd have to look him up on Baseball.
He was
reference.
About 6'3" or something, and he was missing a lung. But he used to run. We used to call him the Giraffe. He used to run sprints, and the coaches would make us keep up with him because he was so fast. And so he about killed us. But he was the nicest guy. Just, you know, there were some really nice guys like I said, Lou Brock was one of the top guys I ever met.
You figure he was with the Cardinals as long as he was, especially toward the end of his career when he wasn't as productive. He had to be an amazing clubhouse guy.
Oh, yeah. Jokes we had. I mean, there was a lot of stuff. Dick Selma was the jokester of everybody. But it was an interesting thing. I'm glad I got the opportunity. Wish I would have done a little better, or maybe put myself out a little more to doing better.
Yeah.
I was too young.
That's hard for pitchers, too. I mean, you figure the overwhelming majority of pitchers, it's not going to work out for. There's going to be an arm injury or just something's going to happen. It seems so few pitchers who actually have long careers. And
well, they actually say that 1 out of every 1,000 people that want to make the big leagues, 1 in 1,000.
Yeah.
And that's because of injuries, of attitude, you know, they do wrong things at the wrong time.
You get a wrong coach in high school or something.
Oh, can ruin you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you have to remember, the coach, to keep his job, has to be successful, and you have to be successful. So that means if you're good, you're going to do more. So he uses you more. Because he's got to stay there, too.
Yeah, no, it's tough. Well, Lowell, it's been a pleasure sitting here and talking with you. Anything else you want to say?
No, I just... happy to have met you.
Yeah, you as well.